How critical will COVID-19 vaccines be for next year's economic rebound? Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Governments across the world have been ramping up coronavirus prevention measures this week as they track the new Omicron variant and the infections that it brings. Germany is rolling out vaccines to children between the ages of 5 and 7 a week earlier than anticipated. And here in Britain, adults are being urged to get their booster shots. These kinds of measures, not just in the developed but developing world, are key to preventing a slowdown in the global economy's ongoing recovery, according to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. In its latest economic projections released this hour, the organization says increasing vaccine access must be an urgent policy priority. Not only, it says, will it help tackle the health crisis, it believes it'll help alleviate some of the bottlenecks at ports, factories, and borders by allowing them to reopen. OECD Chief Economist Laurence Boone told me more.
I think we need to put things in perspective. You know, the G20 countries have been spending about $10,000 billion to support their economies during the pandemic.
That's $10 trillion.
And what we need to vaccinate the world to bring the vaccines to everybody on the planet is $50 billion.
So you're saying basically it all comes down to governments prioritizing vaccine spending. Now, another issue that we've been talking a lot about this year has been labor shortages. And we know that the jobs market hasn't fully rebounded from the effects that we've seen of the pandemic. Do you think that some jobs or sectors of the economy just won't return to normal?
First, the unemployment rate is not back to where it was before the pandemic. But at the same time, we're seeing pockets of labor shortages, especially in those sectors that have really suffered through the pandemic. So, you know, restaurants and bars, recreation, also health. I think on top of this, we've started moving to a more digitalized world. You fly a little less. Then we have more structural changes happening. Some jobs will not come back. Other new ones will emerge. That's why we have this friction. Some people cannot find a job and some firms cannot find the employee with the skills they're looking for.
And inflation is another issue that we've been talking a lot about this year. You know, a lot of it is due to supply chain kinks, which I think has frustrated a lot of central bankers because monetary policy doesn't go that far. It doesn't address some of those problems. So how do you see inflation and central bank policy and the friction, I guess, between the two at the moment affecting growth next year?
Well, central banks have a really tough task. In some countries, there's clearly, growth is back to where it was, employment is back to where it was, inflation has been high for a long time. In those countries, central banks have started to act, and that's appropriate. But in many countries, certain supply tensions are still the main factor behind growth. The best central banks can do is actually to be patient, and we know that's difficult.
Yes, patience is a virtue for a lot of us. You know, we're talking about all the risks to the global economy in the next year or so, but it isn't all bad news, is it, Laurence? There are some pockets of hope, I suppose. Is that right?
Well, actually, the fundamentals that are driving growth are actually quite good. You know, households' balance sheet, corporates' balance sheet are strong. Monetary and fiscal policy remain very supportive. More people are getting vaccinated. Employment has, you know, still needs to get back to where it was, but it's close to that. So when you look at growth, when you look at job growth, it's not bad news at all. But there are huge risks. And I think the main one being vaccination. I mean, let me repeat that we really need to do better in vaccinating the whole world.
Laurence Boone, the OECD Chief Economist. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Well, checking the numbers now, the market's roller coaster week continues with stocks on the upswing this morning. Remarks from BioNTech's boss that the Pfizer vaccine will likely protect against severe Omicron symptoms seems to have soothed investors' nerves. Benchmarks across London, Paris, Frankfurt, and Milan are up in the 1.3 to 1.6% range. Brent and West Texas crude prices are up more than 4.5%. The Turkish lira is also rebounding from a fresh record low that it hit overnight. Boosting the currency is a controversial decision from the central bank to sell foreign currencies like the dollar to stem the lira's decline. It's the first such intervention in years. In a few hours, the European Union will present a plan for a new global investment strategy. The Global Gateway, as it'll be known, will raise billions of dollars to help finance and support infrastructure, climate, and digital projects all across the world, particularly in developing countries. If that sounds familiar, that's because it is. In 2013, China launched its Belt and Road Initiative to do exactly the same thing. But Andrew Small, a fellow at the German Marshall Fund Public Policy Think Tank, says you'll never hear the EU say it's a project designed to rival China's growing global influence.
The EU won't say it in public like that, but in private, everyone is very clear that this is really what it's about. You wouldn't have Global Gateway without the Belt and Road Initiative. I think the sense has been over the last few years that, yes, China swung in and it filled a gap. There are countries with infrastructure needs that were not being met by existing financing mechanisms. It was a sort of market opportunity for China. But a lot of the negative repercussions of the Belt and Road Initiative have really been felt more acutely. Debt distress, China spreading its kind of governance model, China using its economic clout to externalize a lot of those kind of domestic practices as well.
The EU, though, has emphasized that its own program will be values-based and transparent, and it says it wants to create links, not dependencies. How can it do that? If the projects are sort of similar in nature, how will it be different?
The transparency element is important. There are all sorts of non-transparency clauses and things in the Chinese contracts that countries can be even penalized for revealing the details. And you've had these kind of vast collections of projects, adding in some countries up to tens of billions of dollars, with no democratic accountability for what's going on with that. So I think there is a sense that the transparency piece of this really does matter. The values that are embedded in what the European Initiative is supposed to be about will matter across various different dimensions, whether it's the green dimension. I think a lot of this is going to be about helping countries go through a decarbonization transition. China has, in one sense, had kind of a dirty Belt and Road with lots of coal-fired power stations. The environmental dimension will be very much at the core of this. But on the digital dimension as well, it will also be about making sure that countries do not have to go into the kind of package that China offers on telecom, data storage, all of these sorts of things. They will have the financing for a European alternative model that will also allow for privacy, data protection, all of the sorts of things that China won't do. As well, I think the sense is that the forms of economic support that China has provided have tilted towards authoritarian government. They have been, in some cases, about helping relatively corrupt dictatorial governments maintain their hold in power. I think the sense is that this should also, on the European side, be about doing something that bolsters democratic norms in the countries and is open to civil society, is open to critical debate, is figured out with partners and doesn't build the forms of debt dependency that we've seen under the Chinese lending practices.
Is this more from Europe aimed at countering China's growing geopolitical influence, or is it more about helping other countries with some of these projects, like you say, like transitioning to greener infrastructure?
I mean, I think it's supposed to be something that has value in its own right. This is one of the other reasons that I think lots of the European officials don't want to spend their entire time talking about China when it comes to these projects. These are things that should have been done anyway. The EU should have been in a position to do this kind of financing. I think there is a recognition that the Belt and Road has also been a critique. It was providing something to countries that they weren't getting from elsewhere. And there is a huge infrastructure deficit. Countries need financing for the very traditional forms of hard infrastructure, and there needs to be significant financing for some of these other areas, the digital side, green transition, all of these things. So I think these are things that countries need anyway, and that are kind of intrinsically valuable for the countries themselves. They are, in principle, supposed to be of benefit to, for instance, European companies as well in the end. But I think there's no question the Chinese offer in lots of these countries is the competing offer. I don't think it's just about countering China, but the competitive environment that this is operating in is one where this is where countries will look to if the money from Europe and some of the other countries that are, I think, are going to be swinging in with new packages as well, particularly the U.S., do not have these things on the table.
Andrew Small from the German Marshall Fund, thanks for breaking this down for us.
Sure.
There's a lot more on the Global Gateway on our website. Head to bbcnews.com for more on that. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.